Hello, good evening, and welcome to another stimulating edition of the Intrepid Birdman Show. And if you caught it last week, you will be aware that it leaves a nasty rash. So slap another mustard poultice on it, Mother, and stand by for another dose of the same. So what is upcoming on this week's stimulating program? Well, it was going to read you from my forthcoming book, Home Security, but some rotter swiped it. So instead, another do-it-yourself spot. And this week, conquering interstellar distances. Yes, do-it-yourself space travel. Plus, of course, don't miss another romp in the Carpathians with Vlad the Impaler. All this and much, much more, including news from England, the Empire, and abroad. Time now for the Sunday joint.
So let it be. I couldn't stop it, so I let it be. I couldn't stop it, so I let it be. You didn't do it. It wasn't there. You didn't want it. It wasn't there.
Well, good morning, Judge. Yes, I'm back again. I'm in trouble, so it's back to the pen. I found the car, but I couldn't pay.
At me and zigzagged and whizzed off. And I saw it. 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 And I saw it.
Space, the final frontier. Welcome to another Intrepid Birdman Show do-it-yourself spot. Well, as you can imagine, space is pretty jolly big. It's so big, in fact, that light takes billions of years to get from one end of it to the other. But it's not as though space has actually got any ends. It's infinite. But of course, you get the idea, I'm sure. I don't want to labour this point, but we're not talking miles from Earth to its next nearest galactic neighbour, but light years. And even then, the distances look like international phone numbers. There's little point in me trying to explain what a light year is in terms of yards and miles. It would just do your head in. But by way of illustration, let's say you wanted to explore Alpha Centauri, starting from, let's say, Orpington. Well, using a conventional rocket motor, most of your trip would consist of just getting started. A large chunk of it would consist of rotting away in the vacuum of space. You'd arrive a few million years later, in no fit state to explore anything but the inside of a vacuum cleaner. That's how big space gets. Even getting to your nearest planetary neighbour is a matter of many months. And we know already that planets in our solar system are a complete washout for decent weather. I mean, a holiday on Mars is colder than Siberia, even on its warmest day. Venus is too damn hot. So hot, in fact, that your spaceship and you would probably melt. And what about Saturn? Well, you'd be squashed flat before you touch down. And that's supposing that there was something solid to touch down on, and that's in doubt. And even then, you'd probably be microwaved to death before you got there. So why bother? Well, it's exactly that sort of why-bother defeatist attitude that has kept mankind's feet firmly anchored on this planet since the question was first raised. You see, the problem here is relative, as Einstein once said. And all great journeys commence with the first step, as some other famous person said. Anyway, where was I? Ah, relativity. As you will see later on, we can use Einstein's dodgy old equations to help us boldly go. But more of that later. First, we must gird our loins and mentally and physically prepare ourselves for the task in hand. So whilst you are loin-girding and putting yourself in the correct frame of mind, let's listen to some soothing music. And while you're at it, I suggest you practice some shallow breathing, because space isn't big on oxygen either.
Einstein, go-go!
Yourself space travel, part the second, preparation, physical and psychological. Well, how do we prepare ourselves for a journey beyond the stars? Here's the tricky bit. Well, what do we know of space? Firstly, as we've already discussed, it's very, very big. And of course, it's very, very dark. And it's mostly a vacuum. So if you're the sort of person that doesn't like to be confined in a small space, surrounded by a very big space, and left in the dark a lot, then you really do have your work cut out for you. Try sitting in the airing cupboard with the door shut and the lights out in a big black bag over your head. Keep this up for a few hours at a time, and if after a week you haven't gone completely insane, you can move on to lesson two, coping with zero gravity. Of course, we can't easily simulate zero gravity, but we can experience it momentarily by, for instance, driving very rapidly over a humpback bridge. That peculiar feeling you get as the vehicle leaves the ground is caused by both you and the car falling at the same speed. You are, in effect, weightless. Be careful practicing this one. You might also have to deal with increases of gravity. On takeoff, for example, or with rapid changes of direction and orientation, all of which could make you feel sick and giddy if unprepared. Practice by tying yourself to an office swivel chair and having a trusted friend tow it behind a car. Or better still, get a few dozen yards of bungee elastic and make a catapult to propel the chair in random directions. It goes without saying, of course, that the area you choose for this exercise should be free of all obstructions. Still think you're the stuff that space explorers are made of? If so, then you must put all these exercises together in one last exercise. To simulate weightless conditions, get yourself a large water tank and fill it with Epsom salts and water. Rather like those trendy isolation tanks that used to be so popular. When lying in this, your body will feel weightless and disconnected. Lash it to a couple of swivel chairs and tie it to the back of the car. Then climb inside, seal the top, and have a trusted friend drive backwards and forwards over a humpback bridge a few times. By now, you should be getting the hang of it. Stand by for lesson 3.
Your Parisians are so French. They love Patti Smith. Young Parisians are so French at the Champs-Élysées. I wanna go to Paris with you, just to see what the French boys do. Why don't you come to Paris with me, see the young Parisians. Are so French, they sit on the metro. Your Parisians are so French, not like me and you. I wanna go to Paris with you, just to see what the French boys do. Why don't you come to Paris with me, see the young Parisians. Alors, et maintenant, to Paris with me, see the young Parisians. Young Parisians are so French, they're always called to bois. Young Parisians are so French, talk nothing but French. I wanna go to Paris with you, just to see what the French boys do. Why don't you come to Paris with me, see the young Parisians. They're so French, they're so French, they're so French.
Do-it-yourself space travel, part 3, food and nutrition. One of the big problems of space travel is that everything you need for a comfortable lifestyle has to be taken up there with you, which of course means extra weight. and in turn takes up extra space, which in turn means you need more rocket fuel, which adds more weight, and then you need more space for that, and as you can see, it goes on being a bit of a problem almost infinitely. So let's keep it light and compact. Food is fraught with problems in this respect, as indeed is drink. You can recycle your drinking water. The sailors used to on old sailing ships. They would drink their urine on long voyages, and although most of them went mad, they at least remained hydrated and mad. Sadly, however, there's nothing I can think of that can be eaten twice, so it's best to avoid the whole idea. So what would be an ideal food for our would-be space traveller? Well, I would avoid Irish stew. That can be very tricky in zero gravity, as it tends to spread out rather too much. As indeed does borscht. It's altogether a much better idea to stay with fairly sticky foods like bangers and mash, which will adhere well to the plate. Avoid at all costs powerful curry or chili-based foods, since they not only induce diarrhea, which is extremely unpleasant in a sealed, weightless environment, but also produce methane gas, which is a terribly explosive mixture in an oxygen-rich space vehicle and very unpleasant to breathe. Remember, you will be recycling your air, and opening a window to let that fart escape is no longer an option. Also remember that you can't just flush your waste down the toilet in space. Lavatories are a frightful problem in zero-G, and most of the stuff you evacuate will be staying with you for quite some time. If you were, for instance, just to chuck it outside, it would freeze solid instantly and remain at the same velocity as your spacecraft, thus becoming a vicious missile. It's best not tempt the laws of karma. Being what they are, you may well be reunited with your ejected effluvia on the return journey, which by now will be travelling at several thousand miles an hour in the opposite direction, and that could end your trip very badly. Better by far to find foods that will constipate you and avoid the whole nasty business. At this point, I should also mention that cooking is very tricky in space. A good old fry-up is fraught with danger, since nothing will stay in the pan. Quite apart from great slicks of boiling fat and the constant danger of 3-4 fried eggs flopping out the cabin, all that crackling and popping tends to launch sausages at fearful speeds, turning them into lethal, meaty torpedoes. Well, that's about it for food and nutrition, although it is a good idea to think at this point about avoiding cheese biscuits and an after-dinner cigar. And finally, cutlery. Do magnetise your cutlery. It's far too easy to be accidentally decapitated by an orbiting steak knife. Well, see you shortly for Lesson 4. Suit Yourself Space Travel Part 4 Other Considerations. Of course, the biggest drawback to space travel is the duration of the trip. Believe me, after a few weeks of staring into the endless void of space, you'll be getting pretty damned bored. Due to all the petty weight restrictions, you'll never be able to take enough books with you to read, and TV reception is absolutely hopeless. So what will you do for the rest of the trip? Well, some experts reckon that after about a year or so, you'll have gone bonkers anyway, especially if you've been recycling your own drinking water, and that your best hope lies within the more radical field of cryogenics, which in layman's language means being sent to sleep and frozen in a sort of stasis. That's a pretty neat idea in all but one respect, and that is that although lots of people have been cryogenically suspended, none as have yet been successfully thawed out. So it's best not to try that one. Probably our best hope lies with travelling faster than light, which, if successful, would result in your arriving at your destination somewhat in advance of having left home. On the face of it, it could be a rather problematic issue. You see, if, like most folk, you just have to pop back and check that you actually locked the front door before you left, well, you'd always be out of sync with yourself. The door would always be unlocked because you hadn't actually gone yet. But then, I digress. Let's avoid the issue of carrying tons of food, air and reading material about and then being dead of old age on arrival. We must consider bending the continuum a bit. And luckily, there is a way to get up to light speed by using a common or garden photon drive. Now, as I'm sure you all know, photons travel at light speed and have a slight propulsive effect. So, given enough of a starting push, and of course in the absolute vacuum of space where there's no friction, even a simple hand torch will eventually get up to light speed. So in reality, all this faster-than-light drive stuff can be resolved by a dirty great lamp and a huge battery. Well then, that's the general drive principle worked out, so what about the spacecraft itself? Fundamentally, anything big and airtight should do the trick. It doesn't require streamlining, it doesn't have to be glamorous. A quick scan through the military surplus catalogues is a good idea for starters. For instance, only last week the Russian Navy sold off half its submarines for almost peanuts. What could be easier? A craft already designed to keep air in, so most of the hard work has already been done. All you need to do is rip out those useless old diesel engines and stick a dirty great searchlight on the back. That's the big job done already. All we need to do now is to get it into space so that the photon drive can do its stuff. Now here, unfortunately, is the tricky bit. Shifting several tons of rusty Russian submarine a couple of hundred miles in a straight upward direction does require a little ingenuity. And here, I will admit, you may need some outside help. So, after a short music break, we'll go over to our resident science expert, Boris Doppelganger.
Daylight almost gone. It seems there's something I should know. Well, I ought to leave, but the rain it never stops, and I've no particular place to go. When I think I'm winning, when I've broken every door, the ghosts of my life are wilder than before. Just when I thought I could not be stopped, when my chance came to be king, the ghosts of my life are wilder than the wind. Well, I'm feeling nervous, now I find myself alone. is no longer there. Once I was so sure, now the doubt inside my mind comes and goes, but leads nowhere. When I think I'm winning, when I've broken every door, the ghosts of my life grow wilder than before. Just when I thought I could not be stopped, when my chance came to be king, the ghosts of my life grow wilder.
Travel, Part 5. Over now to Kate Brentford and Boris Doppelganger.
Good evening, boys and girls, and welcome to Uncle Boris's space bed. As you can see, this is the very exciting part of the project, and our space vehicle is already taking off.
Can you describe the scene to us, Boris?
Yeah, of course, mein lieb Frommelchen.
Squatting on the launch pad is our prototype FTL craft, which, as you will see, has a number of innovations. The main cabin is a Navy surplus bathysphere. There is only one occupant, and we will be coming back before we left, so there's no need for any extensive supplies.
Boris, are you sure you've got the hang of this relativity thing?
Don't worry. The pilot is not human.
What?
Of course, this is our first launch. We have an ovine volunteer.
How do you get a sheep to volunteer?
That is a subject for another program, Manogen.
Okay, so the sheep is on board a bathysphere.
Not so fast, buddy of mine.
Okay, sorry, go on.
Yeah, and the bathysphere is suspended beneath these big hydrogen balloons.
I see, that's the first stage.
Yeah, as everybody knows, the most difficult bit is getting off the ground in the first place. After that, well, it's easy. Anyway, once the balloons have carried the bathysphere to the limit of Earth's atmosphere, we give it a small, gentle push.
Oh, how's that done?
Well, we have stage two. A contained explosion from this dustbin full of TNT. It will gently thrust the craft beyond the feeble grip of gravity and propel our vessel into orbit.
I see. I suppose then to stage three.
Yeah, the faster than light drive. And then we are bound for the stars.
Brilliant, Boris. It's a great theory. How's the launch actually going?
Well, the vehicle is almost out of sight. Good grief! There goes the second stage.
Isn't that hydrogen dangerous amongst all that TNT?
Look, mein Gott, the space machine! I can see the brilliant light from its faster-than-light drive. But it looks as though it is getting closer, not further away. This must be some strange space warping effect.
Or it's coming down really quickly.
No, our little pilot must have circumnavigated the cosmos and defeated relativity already. But for us, it has been only a few minutes.
Boris, I think this relativity thing works the other way round. It's a few seconds for the sheep, but many years for us.
Ah, damn and blast!
That sounded like touchdown, Boris.
Yeah, what a shame that our pilot cannot speak. What tales he would tell.
Oh, well, perhaps sheep were never meant for the stars. Join us in part 5, where we learn to communicate with other species. Travel Part 6, Dealing with Aliens. Well now, if you have decided to boldly go, then you really must prepare yourself for the possibility of alien contact. After all, with space being nearly infinite, the chances of other intelligent life forms turning up are pretty jolly good. So, how should we deal with that all-important first contact? As any world traveller will know, language can be fraught with difficulty. And although just shouting loudly and waving your arms about is perfectly acceptable when dealing with the French, it might be more dangerous further afield. Of course, it goes without saying that a clean shirt and a pleasant smile usually works quite well on Earth. But what about a totally different culture that never learned to smile? They might think that a large expanse of teeth was a prelude to taking a bite and thus feel threatened. Worse still, they might not use sound at all. They might use, say, pheromones and communicate by sense of smell. Here, a badly chosen aftershave could prove a fatal mistake. Imagine arriving on Mars and having a bizarre-looking creature present its sphincter and fart in your face. Is this a greeting or a warning to go back home, you foreign devil? Furthermore, are you actually dealing with a dominant life form? Or have you been wasting your time trying to talk to some sort of foreign farmyard animal? Tricky, when all the aliens have faces like a baboon's bum and far too many legs. You could spend hours negotiating an Earth-Mars trade agreement by mutual exchanges of methane, only to discover that the real movers and shakers have been watching you from a safe distance and laughing their silly heads off. Imagine the situation reversed. Let's say an alien had made the same mistake here, on Earth.
I say, Brian, what's that damn peculiar-looking beast doing amongst your sheep?
Oh, I don't rightly know, but I sure don't like the look of him.
Ooh, I should say so. Far too many legs for my liking. And, oh, I say, look, he's farting at them. Oh,
dear God, hand me my shotgun. I'll not put up with that.
Oh, come here, you.
Got you, you little blighter. I blames it on all in their genetics, you know.
What, sheep worrying?
No. Those big insects.
Ah.
By Jove, I had one last week. Took nearly a week to flush down the toilet. Ugly brutes on there.
Of course, aliens may not communicate at all. Or they may use some elaborate sort of telepathy. Almost anything is possible. Now, scientists do believe that you can use the universal language of mathematics to communicate. However, this must be a non-starter. Imagine you've just arrived in a restaurant on Alpha Centauri, you're starving hungry, you've been drinking your own urine for months, and you want to order a meal just using numbers. How's that possible?
I'll have a 27, a 32, a 46, a 53, and a large slice of 19, please.
See what I mean? God knows what would turn up. I should leave the whole business of communication up to the aliens. Let them make the first move. And if all else fails, keep a revolver handy. Well, that about wraps it up for space travel for this week. See you again, same time next week, for another stimulating DIY project.
Time now for Vlad the Impaler, an everyday story of Carpathian folk. Tonight, Vlad goes for anger management therapy.
Yeah, Mr. Chakul, kindly step this way.
My, what a lovely pussycat. Give me a puss, puss, puss.
I say, Mr. Dracul, why did you spear that poor little pussy?
Sorry, devil took me momentarily. Now, what's all this anger management nonsense all about, then? Eh?
Well, sir, we did explain it all to Mrs. Dracul. I expect that's why you're here.
Aye, that's right. Bloody Mrs. thought I should come, though I can't imagine why.
Well, sir, she mentioned irritability, short temper, violent mood swings, and a tendency to...
Did she now?
She also warned me about that.
Oh. Well, that's enough of my bloody so-called shortcomings.
Of course, sir.
Now, get on with bleeding therapy and stop mincing about.
Of course. And would you mind helping me down off this pointy stick?
No, I don't think I will.
I'm afraid I can't help you from up here, sir.
You'll just have to shout. Now stop moaning about pointy sticks and get therapy.
Well, I really must insist. I cannot empathise with all this swaying and bleeding going on.
All right, but hurry up. I've got a busy impaling schedule to do.
I think that could easily be the root of the problem, sir.
All right. Now, you look here. It's all very well for you to hang around moaning about my so-called bloody problem, but so far I've been here 10 minutes in anger management therapy, and all you've done is wind me up.
Take a moment, Mr. Dracul, to consider the effect that your irritability is having on those around you.
Hell, man. You don't know what irritable is. Come here, you daft, smooth-talking... Now, that's what I call irritable.
Yes, I get the point, Mr. Dracul. And having now got the point, I don't think that I'm going to be able to help you with ordinary therapy.
I was just beginning to feel we were getting somewhere. You bloody therapist, you're the bleeding same. You want to give up when you get a difficult patient. You collapse at the first hurdle. I'll tell you what I think. I think I should come back again and we'll do the same thing next week.
Yes, of course. Bye-bye.
You know, Ned, I was sceptical when I came here, but now I feel it's really done me some good. Come on, get your belly like you up. I feel like a sing song.
I can't seem to face up to the facts. I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. I can't sleep cause my bed's on fire. Don't touch me, I'm a real live wire. Psycho killer. Run, 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 run.
Well, sadly, it's time for us all to bugger off. We've run out of time. The Intrepid Birdman Show has wended its weary way towards the end. So Lance Boyle, Boris Doppelganger, Hilly Dines, and Vlad the Impaler wish you all a jolly good evening. And in a programme entirely hand-knitted by natives of the Polynesian Islands, the Clockwork Wireless Broadcasting Company closes down for the night. But do listen out for us again. Same time, same frequency, same channel. And as they say on Mars, ack-ack, ack-ack, ack-ack-ack-ack, ack-ack. Thank you, and good night.
Say goodbye, Overteamies.